Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. Joining me this morning is my special guest, Jamie Seloff, author and entrepreneur from Edinburgh, Pennsylvania. She is my last guest for this month's topic about women empowerment, working moms, the balancing act of motherly love and career. In this hour, we will get to know Jamie, who I believe truly exemplifies the spirit and the letter of women empowerment. She has a remarkable story to tell us how events in her life transformed her to be the person who she is today. Good morning, Jamie. Thank you for joining me this morning. How are you?
Great. Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for having me on.
Wonderful. How is Edinburgh?
Sunny and beautiful.
Wonderful. It's hot and humid. It's not so much humid, but it's really hot in Dallas, Texas. I would like to get started this morning by covering the end, which is what I believe is actually a new beginning in my book, so to speak, anyway. Please tell us a little bit about what your current business endeavor is.
Well, I'll give you the thumbnail version because it gets kind of long, but I'll tell you, it may surprise you to learn that on June 6th, I took my vows of ordination, and I became a spiritual...
Congratulations.
Thank you. I became a spiritualist minister and a certified metaphysician. Mm-hmm. I still have another year to go in that program.
Mm-hmm.
As part of my two-year education there, which I'm halfway through, I'm required to do a project. So I'm going to be holding live teleseminars, mm-hmm. offering reading and healing sessions, and I'm doing that in conjunction with a classmate who's going to help me co-host those.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, I still need 140 client evaluations, so I've been offering discounted phone readings and healings as well as a weekly drawing for a free 30-minute session to
wow.
try to get those.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also upgrading my site for authors and book lovers. You're familiar with my
right.
polka dot banner site. We're currently giving away author signed book every week there,
mm-hmm.
And look for some changes this fall on that site. We're also going to be building a new site called Ask About Healing, and that's going to be utilizing what I've learned from the Polka Dot Banner site and
mm-hmm.
Be for people interested in health and wellness, body, mind, and spirit.
Right.
And, of course, I'm continuing to design books for clients. I've been doing that for over a decade, so I'm going to keep right on doing that, and I'm loving every minute of it, even though it keeps me quite busy. I guess you could say I'm like the hair club for men guy. I not only wrote a book about transforming my life, but I'm living
right.
it and proving it in that my methods work.
Well, good. Wonderful. I mean, this is fantastic. Since the last time I talked to you, I knew you were busy this for the month of June. I was trying to get you at the beginning of June, and all of a sudden right now you're saying, well, I can't exactly do this until the end, which is actually fine. It worked out very well because I wanted to close out Women Empowerment, Working Moms, the Balancing Act of Motherly Love and Career with you because I just sense this sense of you, to me, I mean, knowing you for the last year had truly given me this sort of a feeling that you truly exemplify the spirit and the letter of what I'm trying to get across to moms out there that, hey, you know, you can do something positive for yourself because we are always out there doing something positive for someone else. And sometimes we can take a little time out and focus on ourselves. And as we learn, and that's what I've learned from my various moms, that as you can't teach someone unless you teach yourself first. And so I think what you're doing is just fantastic. What I'd like to do now is to go back in time and let's get back into history and talk about where it all begins. tell us a little bit about your family and when, you know, where you grew up and house life in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then in Ohio, and I think you were briefly in New York. So tell us about that.
Well, I was born in Pittsburgh, and my father was a traveling salesman, and he wanted to be closer to his territory, so he moved to Ohio. But my father was ill on and off from the age of my being three. And, you know, I have to say that even though we went through that, and I don't know that life was really normal, I don't think I really recognized that at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My parents deeply loved me. I want to say they cherished me because they had lost a 9-year-old daughter before I was born. She was hit by a car.
Oh. Oh, wow.
And so even though there was all of these life situations going on around me, I just kind of grew up thinking that was normal, I guess, or that life just sort of continued on and we may do. My mother used to say Miller women were strong, and
mm-hmm.
you held your head up in a storm, and
mm-hmm.
so that's what we did. We just kept going forward day to day and making mm-hmm. the best of it.
Right. I mean, that's an interesting story because, I mean, I was adopted, as you know, as a child, and my mom and my dad grew up in an era that, you know, they both had to work very hard, and especially my mom, and she actually had three miscarriages. And one she carried to almost about, the last one was to about 6-7 months or so. And so it was very, very hard on her, and it was very hard for her at that time. And then she actually adopted a little boy, and that little boy actually passed on a month later.
Wow.
So it was very devastating, and then she finally got me, so thank God that things work out. And this is very interesting, and the reason why I'm bringing all this up is because I talked to a friend of mine. It was just something in the course of conversation this past weekend, and she said something very interesting. She says, you know, life is a gift, and you should respect it and use it properly.
I agree with that 100%.
And I thought, wow, because it's something that we take it for granted. And so when I heard that, when she said that, you know, Johnny, look at it this way. Life is a gift. Respect it and use it properly. And I thought, wow, that's cool. And I asked her, I said, can I use it as part of my recipe for living as I put things together? She said, sure,
I was
no going to
say, I figured that was probably in your book somewhere because that one's a really good gem.
Yeah, it's coming up, and not this one, but the next one for sure. And so I kind of, you know, I just wanted to mention that because of what you mentioned. But you actually, when you were growing up, you actually traveled the world too, and when you were in junior high and high school. So please tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was very lucky because I did have so many experiences despite the difficulty that went on at home, and I started twirling baton. My mother wouldn't let me take tap. I wanted to take tap desperately, but my sister had done that, and she said, no, it's too close to home for me. So I started twirling baton, and I became a part of a troupe called the Nile Scotaires. And the head leader of that, Veronica Caruso, wanted to teach baton to people all over the world so it would become an Olympic event, which
mm-hmm.
it hasn't as yet, but that was her dream. So we traveled to England and Scotland, Switzerland, Germany, and many others. And while we were there, we would join up with other groups like that and exchange ideas and perform. And at one time, I had over 60 trophies on the mantle. I have since donated those to another group. But it was a pretty big thing in my life at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's wonderful. I mean, this is very exciting. We have a caller. I'm not sure whether she's going to be joining us in this conversation, but I just wanted to say hello to area code 862. Can you hear me? Hello? Area code 862?
Hi, yes, this is area code 862.
Yes. Can we know your name, please?
My name is Charity.
I'm sorry.
I'm here. I'm just listening to the conversation. It sounds really good, and I appreciate the conversation between the two of you. I do have a question.
Yes.
Now, did you take? You said you were adopted, right?
Yeah. The question is to me, sir.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
go ahead. Please.
You were
yes.
in your story there just a minute ago. You said you were adopted, right?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, right. I just want to be sure I heard that right. Okay,
that's right.
Thanks. I just want to listen.
Yes, okay, great. Thank you for joining us, though, and I'm just keeping you on the air in case if you have any questions, feel free to, you know, to join in again. And again, your name's, what's your first name?
It's Charity. I'm
Charity.
Deaf. I'm speaking through a sign language interpreter.
Okay, great, wonderful. Well, Jamie, let's continue right here. I just wanted to acknowledge this person that joined us, so... And I just wanted to make sure that, you know, he's aware that we have him on the air also. Going back to you got married shortly after college. I mean, high school actually, and I believe it's your high school sweetheart that you got married to.
Yeah.
And I do wanted to mention something here because which is very interesting. This year is your 30th wedding anniversary.
That's
correct?
Right.
Yeah.
And in this day and age, that's an accomplishment.
No question. And that's the reason why I'm bringing this up, because I thought it was I thought it's very, very it's fantastic for you guys to have been married for 30 years. And I know the way the times that you and I have talked, how wonderful the whole entire family relationships that you have had. And so please elaborate a little bit about that.
Well, I believe marriage is a commitment. And you know, not all of our journey has been easy. There's been times when things were not all smiles and roses.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband had to care for me when I had cancer, and
mm-hmm.
also again when I nearly died after a hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I cared for him when he was in bed for 5 months after back surgery.
Wow.
So we like to say that we both have had our days, but fortunately we haven't had those days on the same day.
right.
And, you know, our friends say, well, we seem to still have that spark from when we were kids. And I think it's because we became best friends first and then we got married second. And we always believed from the beginning that, you know, we would get through the hard times together, and we have. And I always know that even if, you know, we kind of get irritated at each other, I'll look at him and there'll be like this little spark in his eye and I'll go, we're going to be okay.
No, but that's good. I think you guys are meant to be with each other, and you mentioned something very, very important, because you guys were friends before. Obviously, you all knew each other for a very long time, and in the course of this interview, you know, I do have certain things that I'm going to ask you later, which is kind of interesting, because collectively, you guys made certain decisions together. But I want to focus on the fact that you mentioned about you had cancer. You were diagnosed with cancer at a very young age, and that basically sort of was your major turning point in your life. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I can honestly say that that time seems like it belonged to somebody else. I mean, I have so radically changed my life since then, transformed it, as I say in my book, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes feel like I've lived several lifetimes since then.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, though, that the most important part about getting through that time was I truly did believe I was going to die. And so I set my mind to the task of getting well. It was a conscious decision and a conscious effort. And I began to realize, and this will sound kind of brash, but I realized no one cared about whether I lived or died
mm-hmm.
as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even though my husband and my family, they were all saying they, you know, wanted me to get well, it didn't matter to them as much as it mattered to me. It was my life. And I realized if I waited around for everybody else to tell me what to do, I was going to die. So I
How old were you when you were going through this?
The cancer, yeah. So I stood up for myself. I spoke up, said what I felt I needed to do for me to get well.
And you were around 20, in your early 20s, aren't you? How
24.
Old were you? 24, okay.
And I had a 2.5-year-old son at the time.
Right, right.
So that action step of first making a conscious decision of working towards getting well, and standing up for myself and saying, you know, this is what I have to do to get well, that was probably the most important aspect of that. And, you know, I was heading for the same path as my father, my mother,
mm-hmm.
And many relatives before me who died before their time because of illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to make some changes.
No, I think that's a profound statement you made, because you made a personal decision within yourself to
right.
make a difference. Because when I was growing up, I think when I was around 7 or 8 years old, and my sister was 6 years older than I am, excuse me, my dad contracted severe diabetes. And for 2 years, and this is when we were living in Malaysia, and he went through 2 years of on a special diet, eating just, I believe it was at that time, rye bread and drinking water. And, of course, being Asian and being Chinese, I mean, you're talking about all the so-called fatty foods and whatnot and everything else. And for him to make that personal transformation to the day actually when he passed on, when he was 59, this was in 81 or 82, he never did die from diabetes. He cured himself. And
you know, and I thought that was amazing when I read that in your book, that
right.
he stuck to that so religiously, even though it was really against the culture as far as how they were eating.
Right, right. But what happened is that it gave me strength and insight where, you know, you can make the difference yourself. And that's what you did in your experience. And I believe that's what you've learned from that particular time.
Absolutely.
In your life. In your book, Transformational Healing, you mentioned something about physical symptoms being connected to emotional ones. How do they both relate to one another?
Well, I could write a book about that. Oh, I did. So in my book, I talk about how I locked myself in the bedroom, and I did. I refused to come out until I had found out the meaning of all the illness in my life. How it affected my family, what did this mean for me? And I prayed to God, and I said, show me what all of this has been for. And suddenly it all began to make sense. And I'll tell you that what I learned was not new. I've recently been reading books from the 1860s, and they were talking about this emotional connection, how the mind has power to create both good and bad, whether illness or, you know, making yourself into the next greatest author. So, you know, this mind power thing, I begin to understand that connection, that our thoughts are things, our beliefs are things. Mm-hmm. But at that time, I didn't know those things, and I had to be brought to an understanding of them through trial and error. You know, so I read countless other books on healing and wellness, spirituality, books on everything from astrology to diet and nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't finding what I needed to heal my life. I had already healed myself from cancer at this time, mm-hmm. but I didn't really know how I had done it, and I wanted to be able to reproduce it. And as I began to learn these things, you know, I wasn't really learning them from these other books, even though they were well-known, highly respected authors. So I decided to write my own.
Right.
And that's where that came from the need to take my life one step further from not just healing from the disease, but healing my life totally.
That's interesting, though. How much of that transformational healing impacted your life as far as once you sort of found this enlightenment and
right.
you start putting it down on paper, how does that affect you? You know how, like, sometimes we talk about, like, almost overnight you feel older, or overnight you feel a little wiser. So how does that transform you, impact your life?
You know, I want to say, you know, I had cancer when I was 24, and from that I ended up being pregnant right after, like 4 weeks after my last radiation treatment, I ended up being pregnant, and the doctor said, how can this be? And I said, well, you know, this is how it works. And they said, no, that's not what we meant. You're not supposed to be able to get pregnant. And
yeah.
I was. So I went from this horrendous cancer experience to having a new baby to kind of being thrown into motherhood. I did have my 2.5-year-old son, you know, before that.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 3 or 4 years to kind of find out again who I was, what I wanted to be. I still had many experiences and things that had to happen to me before I realized I had to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And then the book came, and the realization came, and the enlightenment came.
Mm-hmm.
About 15 years later, when I suddenly had some time to myself and could, I had actually written down a book in 1991,
mm-hmm.
First draft, and I realized at the time it wasn't going to sell. I had sent it to like 60 publishers and not gotten any response.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew it needed to be revamped, but it took 15 years to process everything and go beyond healing myself and then understanding how I held myself to being able to teach that to others.
No, but that's interesting, because I think when you look at life, when you, you know, this is something that my German mom told me about this, and I have it in my book here, and I know you've read this before. It says, every once in a while, a situation may occur that requires us to radiate our energy of positive goodwill, compassion, and love for others. Until we try to put ourselves beyond our comfort zone, we will not realize what it takes to make a difference in the person's life and in ours. And what you have done, basically, you went through the process of you putting things down on paper, and it took you 15 years to kind of really go back and start looking at it, that you have it within you to make the difference, to make it happen for other people, and you have this strong surge of wanting to help people.
Right.
And that's a big difference, and a lot of people don't even realize that.
I think it was Edgar Cayce who said, first small groups, then... first individuals, then small groups, then the masses. And that's exactly what happened. You know, I started telling people individually, you know, well, how did you get well? And then next thing you knew, it was small groups. And then it was
right. Like,
you know, the book became the way to tell the masses.
Right, right. You have exercises in your book that helps individuals to transform themselves. What is the single most important exercise you recommend to everyone that they should do if they wish to transform themselves?
Well, it's funny that you'd ask that, because I've been asked to do a workshop in the fall, and I only have 1 hour in which to impart all my wisdom on a group of women. So, of course, I believe all of my exercises are vital, but you know, I only have this 1 hour, so I had to figure out which one would be the most important. And so I figured if a person could only do one, I've got it narrowed down to either Section 3, which is where I teach how to find direction in your life, or Section 4 in my book, where I explain how to receive the guidance you need to answer all those difficult questions we face. And in this particular workshop, it'll probably be the latter one. I'll probably be talking about how to get that guidance that you need, and I'm going to do it in a way that you'd least expect. So these people are going to go away with about... 8 or 10 messages of guidance that they had all along and didn't know, and I'm going to show it to them in a way they would very least expect. So I'm looking forward to doing that.
Now, you've done these exercises before too, right? I mean, you've done the seminars before, and this is something, an add-on to what you're doing?
I have not done a specific seminar on my book. I've been putting that off because I've been so busy helping other authors with their books. And so part of the reason that I went back to school and got the credentials that I did was so I could take these workshops to the public. I've done seminars of many different types, specifically with homeschooling and the writing centers, but this one I haven't done because it's, like you said, really putting yourself out there.
Right, right, right. Do you feel that that's something that just happened recently, that you needed to go to the next level?
Yes.
Good, good.
You know, I got to a place where I said, you know, use it or lose it. And I could see where the gifts that I had and the information I wanted to impart either had to be utilized and given or set it aside and forget about it. You know, what good is it if it's going to sit in a drawer?
Right.
So I said, you know, now's the time. My boys had both graduated and gone on in their lives. They, you know, didn't need me as a mom and educator anymore, so it was time. It was time for me to take a look at myself again.
That brings us to, I want to talk a little bit, coming back about the entrepreneurship part of your life. Your mom was obviously a major influence in you starting your own home business. Tell us a little bit about what she did when you were growing up, and how it relates to your current entrepreneurial spirit.
Well, you know, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. It says I'm off the host queue, so I didn't know what that meant.
Oh, okay.
As I explained to you before, my father became seriously ill when I was 3, and as my mother used to tell the story, she didn't know what to do with herself while he was going through that, so she knitted a sweater that was so large they never did find anybody who could wear it. So with my father coming home, she had to figure out something to do to keep him busy. And taking from a friend's bazaar sale ideas, she started making these felt Christmas tree ornament dolls. Most were storybook characters that she designed from my kids' picture books, Raggedy Ann and Andy, the Mother Goose characters, such as Goosey Goosey Gander, Wee Willie Winky, some characters now that we associate with Disney, you know, like in Winnie the Pooh and Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, things like that. And my father said at one point, nobody will ever buy the darn things, but my mother proved him wrong. Not only did she sell well without ever advertising, only word of mouth,
Right.
But she eventually started selling them to Marshall Fields in Chicago, mm-hmm. Frederick Nelson's in Seattle, and specialty shops all over the country.
Right.
She worked tirelessly, 16 hours a day usually. From January through November, she would sit at her, she had a little table in front of her chair, and then eventually she turned a bedroom into kind of a workspace, and at one point she even had 9 women working for her, helping
mm-hmm.
her
mm-hmm.
hand sew and create these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and my father chipped in. He would build these dies to cut the pieces out of felt, and had a 1-ton punch press that he bought
mm-hmm.
to punch out all the little felt pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he died when I was 15, and then when I graduated from high school, my mother decided to remarry and was going to smash the dies and retire.
Mm-hmm.
So she asked me if I wanted to take over the business. And I know it probably hurt her, but I said no. Because honestly, I did not have her talent or patience for creating
yeah.
them. The way she
right.
could turn a hand or make the eyes look just so, or she would play with their hair until it just
right.
was just wonderful. She was a genius
mm-hmm.
in her time and in the way she did this. And I didn't have that. I had my own talents.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say if anybody's interested, I have set up a website for at yolandas.com, and that's kind of hard to remember, so you can even go to my saloff.com website, and there's a link at the bottom of the page for that.
Mm-hmm.
But an amazing woman.
Now, you mentioned something very interesting, because there's a lot of artistry and handcrafts masters out there. And sometimes it's a shame because those crafts, you cannot really pass it on because it's very individualized.
Yes.
And so it's only for that moment, that generation that just does phenomenal work with their hands. And apparently your mom certainly did that. But as far as the entrepreneurial spirit within oneself, that follows with the DNA. So
yes.
Tell us about that, because I know you own several websites. So do tell us about that.
I was counting this morning. I have
uh-huh.
16 websites.
Uh-huh.
And my sons will tell you that I'm probably on my computer 16 hours a day. Instead of sitting at my little sewing table, I'm sitting at my computer desk.
Mm-hmm.
I get part of that from my father, who was an electronics buff and used to build his own stereos.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also very organized to a T, so that the two things kind of work hand in hand together. And, I wanted to be at home with my kids, and my husband kept saying, well, if you only had a job, we could have this, we could have that. And so I kind of created one.
Mm-hmm.
I had a little bit of luck and a little bit of talent, and everything kind of added up, and I've been doing book designing now for over a decade. In fact, I had to give up doing web design for others because I no longer had time to do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to when you guys got married, because I understand that Tim and you made a decision very early in life to homeschool with your children, and I know that the fact that you guys actually graduated from public schools. So how does that decision came all about into fruition, and was it difficult for you guys to do that? And obviously, you know, it turned out to be very successful in what I understand about your children and the where the life that you guys have created, so to speak, for everyone.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, my youngest son was not the type to sit at a desk and do a worksheet, and that was the kind of education we felt he was getting. He wanted to work with his hands and create, very much like my mother. In fact, he has actually made some of his own dolls that we
mm-hmm.
hang on the tree alongside of hers
mm-hmm.
that are wonderful. So, you know, he wanted to explore the world, and here
right.
was this sponge ready to be filled and wasn't getting any educational sustenance. So here's a funny story. My husband could see that we were having difficult problems, and I mean, we were spending 3 hours a night trying to do homework, and there was crying and gnashing of teeth and all of that. And he said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I'm going to homeschool him." And at that point, he didn't know that I'd been looking into that or whatever. And he said, "Okay." At this time, my son was just finishing the 5th grade, my youngest son. And my husband said, "Well, what's plan B?" And I said, "I don't have one." And he said, "Oh, crap," because my husband had this methodology where he figured if you really were committed to something, you didn't have a plan B. Plan A, you had to be committed to it, and you had
right.
to make it work if there's no backup plan.
Right.
So I had no backup plan. I had to make it work. So I can remember we sat through our last in-school meeting, and I knew we were going to homeschool him at that point. We had made the decision the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And they were basically telling us in this meeting that my son would never graduate from high school. He'd never be able
wow.
to effectively write. That despite the government mandates, their teachers would not help, not could not help, would not help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought, that's fine. I'm going to take him home, and I'm going to homeschool him next year.
Mm-hmm.
The very next day after that meeting, my older son went to a teen dance, and this was one of those school shootings. You know,
mm-hmm.
There were three widely publicized across the country at that time that led up to Columbine that happened afterwards.
Oh, wow.
But before Columbine, there was Edinburgh, there was Paducah, Kentucky, I'll get it out, and there was another in Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Oh,
and okay. these my older son witnessed this shooting at
mm-hmm.
the school dance, and from that we thought, well, this is fine, you know, we're going to homeschool our younger son, and he's going to be homeschooled too now. And he said no. He said, Mom, he was 14 at the time.
Right.
He said, my friends need me. He was kind of, you know, one of the leader type kids at that time.
Right.
And he said,
right.
my friends need me. So he actually stayed in school another few years,
mm-hmm.
and he only homeschooled his last two.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you, we've never regretted that decision. They have gained far more than they ever would have in school. They were often complimented on their achievements,
right.
their exemplary behavior. My youngest son is a vet tech now, and his boss will say to me, and he has a brother, you know, can we get him in here too? They're both, you know, extremely hard workers, dedicated, committed
yeah.
to whatever they're doing. They get along with adults as well as people their own age.
Right.
My younger son gets along usually with children younger than him.
Mm-hmm.
They never really went through those stages that most kids go through where...
Right.
They're rebellious and are into drugs and alcohol, and
right.
we never had to worry about those things.
Right.
We had a good family connection where we could talk things out, and if there was an issue, we'd work it through. And, you know, I will say that there were times that it was a sacrifice for my own personal time.
Mm-hmm.
In Pennsylvania, it's very difficult to homeschool.
Right.
The curriculum and that all has to be approved, and we have a I can't remember what they call it, but there's a person then that has to come in and review everything you've done for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was stressful at times, and you were always second guessing yourself, did I teach him the right things, you know,
right.
oh gosh, I forgot to teach him about this, you know, is that going to be, you know, are they going to come and take me away because I forgot to teach him this one thing in history. And
right.
What we based our whole education on was being able to teach them how to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, about a week after my younger son graduated, he came to me and he said, you know, on the computer, I was just reading about such and such, and it's this and that and the other thing, and I thought, he's learning.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of school. There's no longer anybody teaching him what to do, and he's still learning. And I'll
right.
tell you, he's still doing that today,
right.
both of them. Are still doing that today. It's a wonderful feeling.
Well, you have started them out in the right direction, and you of all people know this. Things that I've learned from my various moms is that moms are by nature, natural instincts, they are the best teacher, the coach, and the counselor for their loved ones. And of course, I mean, they themselves have to be a learned person. And having said that, I'm not talking about moms have to, you know, get their bachelor's degree or master's degree or PhD. It's got nothing to do with that. It's a matter of an attitude, it's a psyche thinking that, well, hey, I want to do the best I can for my children, and so you go out there and you seek the knowledge that's needed to pass on to them.
Right.
So that's a bit different, because I think there is a tendency that for people to think, and again, this is strictly my own opinion, because sometimes we have a tendency to outsource everything. And
right.
In life, you can't really outsource everything in life. There's certain things that you have to take the lead. And obviously, having you and your husband going through your own personal life and personal refinements, and especially like you have the chance to travel over the years when you were growing up, seeing the world for whatever it may be. To some, it might be baton twirling. To you, of course, it's baton twirling, but it's more than baton twirling.
Right. It makes
you
a big difference on how you see
the world.
See your world. You know,
that's right.
To show how that has transferred to my kids, too, recently my son came to me and told me to get on Twitter, which you and I both know is
right. Is
the big buzz right now. And he's been following the events over in Iran, and he's been very touched by them.
Right.
Even though he has never traveled the world, he's now seeing how wonderful our country is, whereas I got to see firsthand many times everything from people living in boxes to how, in many places in Europe, if you want fresh meat, you go down first thing in the morning because they don't refrigerate it. It's there on the the counter.
It's literally going to the butcher and getting fresh meat.
Right. So there's an entirely different culture out there from what we know in this country. And
right. Being
exposed to that widens your view of humanity and I think your compassion for humanity.
These are the things that sometimes people don't realize. And again, I don't know at this moment in time to literally, offer suggestions on how to fix things, but I do know because
right.
I grew up in Malaysia, so we were under the British educational system, and that's one thing people always ask me about, how's that? I said, well, if that's one thing that the British did very well for the colonies is the educational system, because it's totally different, it's very unique, and being Asian, a lot of people say, well, your parents are on top of you all the time. And I said, not really. It is and is not, because it ultimately depends on each individual, how far you want to go with it. And I think ultimately you have somewhere along the line you made the decision whether you want to leave, what my mom would say, do you want to live your life underneath a coconut shell, you want to venture out a little
right.
bit, and so that's very different, because my mom grew up in an era that when she's old enough, at 6 years old, 5, 6 years old, she's enrolled in what we call Kitchen 101, and that's it. And my dad didn't have any because of the situation he was in. He only had like sixth grade, and then had to go out there and work and make it work. And in his life. And so having said that, but they knew what the power of education is to everyone else. And I think in my book, if you recall, I wrote about, one thing for sure my mom knew was what an A looked like, a B, C, and D, and F. And she knew that the grade color B is a passing grade and the color red is a failing grade. And we could not, my sister and I could not go home and bring our report cards and, kind of wing our way out of that deal. And so she knows that much, enough to know that, okay, you're grounded in her sense of what grounding is all about. So there's a lot of humor in it when you look at something like that. But she took ownership. She realized that these are important things that you have to do in your life, not for her life, I guess, in some ways, but in the lives of her children, right? And so that's taking ownership. And that comes back again to the idea of not outsourcing it to someone else, because when it's all said and done, that's something very, very personal. There are things in life you could outsource, but not everything. I want to touch briefly about the fact that you also, now that you've done a lot of things as far as being an entrepreneur and your personal transformation in your life, things that some people may not know, but you do a lot of volunteer work at the same time also. And the unique thing about it is that you touch students. You do a lot of volunteer work with elementary schools, helping them. So let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, this morning I shared with my readers, I have several lists, and I told them a story from my book about how my mother got her life back after my father died.
Mm-hmm.
And after my illness, I needed to get mine back. And one day this flyer came home from school that they were looking for volunteers to help in the writing center. Mm-hmm. And from that, I became the head of the program, which grew and grew every year. Now, I have recently retired from that. I don't do that anymore. But I'll tell you, I did even write a book about how to build one. But let me tell you a funny story about that. You know, at that time, I had no public speaking experiences. And I got up in front of 25 moms to tell them about what we were going to do for this program. And I swear I could not get a word of English out of my mouth. I had sounds coming out, but nothing that made any sense. And I was absolutely mortified. I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned my back to them, and I took a couple of deep breaths. And I turned back around, looked them deep in the eye, and I said, here's what we're going to do. And somehow it all came out. So, you know, now I can stand up in front of hundreds of people without a concern or care, but you'd never guess at that time because here it was like 25 moms. I couldn't even say a word in English. But that program was fabulous. It was started by a teacher by the name of Marilyn Marslack, and she had found these hardbound bare books and wanted kids to write stories and illustrate their own books and kind of self-publishing on a child's level kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, she got the whole school involved, and it was fabulous. So over the years, we had published somewhere between each child was writing two books a year at one point. We had 100 parent volunteers, and I learned to take the parents that would come in and find what they were good at. I would have some that would come in and were great with working with the kids because we did this all throughout the day, all throughout the week. We'd go get kids a few at a time from the classroom, help them write these stories. Then we'd send these books home to moms who, you know, maybe worked during the day but wanted to help out, so they would type the books at home and send them back in a folder. It was this whole production line. We had parents who came in and did nothing but glue and put the books together.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids would do all the pictures themselves and that. So it was a wonderful program. Over the years, it sort of deteriorated and wasn't exactly what it was when it started.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that one teacher still continues to do it. And the books are fabulous. I still have my kids' ones, and they're on a special shelf, and every once in a while they'll find out that I have them, and they'll go, oh, why did you keep those? And I'll go, because they're so special, you know.
But you guys annually produce, and I guess at the height of this program, you produce around 500 books, don't you?
Right. Every kid we had, in fact, I think it was like 1,000,
mm-hmm.
now that I think about it, because there was about 500 kids in the elementary school,
mm-hmm.
and each one was writing two books a year.
Wow.
And this was all volunteer. I was spending about, I think it was more than that, because my husband was like, why don't they pay you? You're there all the time. You know, when are you going to come home and do my laundry and stuff like that?
Uh-huh.
But,
uh-huh.
you know, that also played into that, you know, taking ownership of my kids and being around my kids. That was one way I could do that.
Right.
So...
But how was the other parents looking at you from a perspective? But now, you mentioned something about were your kids in public school at that time, or were they already
Yeah,
out
that was when they were – I started that at the elementary school,
mm-hmm.
so they were still at the elementary school at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I said, my younger son, we started homeschooling him after fifth grade, so he had
right.
– we had let him go on to middle school. And that's when, you know, we thought, well, that'll be a big change, and we'll see how that, you know, works for him. And it just didn't. So, so, you know, at the school, at the elementary school, then, in fact, that actually flipped back so that when I started homeschooling him, I would take him with me to do this program, and we have kids helping kids. So he got to participate in that as well from both sides.
Right. Now, when you did this also, I'm sure, you know, a lot of times, you know how we start programs and we didn't
yes.
really, you know, it mushroomed out to where
right,
it's beyond what we're thinking. And I'm sure, because I'm seeing some wonderful highlights about how you got the parents somehow, somewhere online engaged in the program.
How did I do that? Well,
Right. I mean, that's wonderful. I think, you know, when you do something like that, because what happens is that you engage them. To a point where you let them all of a sudden become part of the children's life.
I can't tell you how, you know, all I can tell you is I would send out these little letters, that said, you know, we need volunteers, and I would try to make them sound enthusiastic and that anybody could do it. You know, no matter what your skills are, we have a job for you. And, you know, we tried to work around people's schedules and around people's jobs and also, like I said, you know, find what they were good at. And it just worked. I don't know. Maybe I have a talent that I'm not understanding, that I can't put into words for that. I just know that somehow it all came together. And the last year that my youngest son was in school, I not only did that, but I also became president of the Parent Teachers Association of the school. And I also, at that same year, managed a writers' conference for a statewide writers' organization.
Right. But when you were involved with that, with the school, I think one thing fascinating, because I think a lot of times people don't realize that, you know, you get parents engaged in the children's, I guess, daily schoolwork or whatnot. What's intimidating to a lot of parents sometimes, and of course you have some parents that basically teach their kids. They know their stuff and everything else. But then, say, majority of the parents, on the other hand, on the flip side, you do have parents that say, oh, my God, this is intimidating. You know, I can't do this. I can't do that. But what you have created was, hey, you know, I know I could cut paper. I know I could type things up. I know I could glue stuff together. And I'm part of the child's life.
Yes.
And I think that's the fascinating part, because I think a lot of times some programs doesn't allow that, because if, you know, like, just imagine, I mean, I don't have any kids or anything, I'm not married, but say if the child comes home and says, Dad, you know, how do you solve this quadratic equation? You know, it's like, oh, no. I don't want to look like I'm an idiot, you know? But if he comes home or she comes home and says, can you glue this for me, or can you type this thing up, can you cut this thing, you know, according to, then it becomes something that's less stressful and becomes more engaging for me to be involved, which turned out to be a win-win situation in all actuality. So that's interesting part. But I know you also got involved. You mentioned something about being with the at the higher level of, you know, with the community in terms of being involved with Writers Association. You are heavily involved with Penn Writers Association. Tell us a little bit about that.
Penn Writers started out as an organization of writers in Pennsylvania of all genres. And it's gradually grown to a national association. They do so much. And I've been a part of them since 1993. Their mission is to help writers learn their craft and to do it well. And they provide all sorts of workshops and groups. We have a local group right here in our area, and they're starting to form charter groups all across the country as we speak so that they can be larger and more identified nationwide. They promote their published authors in a big way and also, you know, invite them to teach some of the workshops. In other words, those who have teaching, those who have not, and by that, we have become maybe one of the more successful writers' organizations in the country because of the dedication to the craft and by imparting the knowledge to writers that they need. When agents and editors decide whether or not to go to conferences, we're told that we're one of the ones they enjoy going to, because they know that the people there are going to be intently interested and talented because of the training and the education that we help impart to them. And the networking is also big, you know, just exchanging ideas with other writers. You know, how did you promote your book, or how did you get your book sold, or how do I write a query letter, you know.
Right.
So there's wonderful things going on there. You can find out more about them at PennWriters.com, and that's two N's, PennWriters.com, and I built their website as well. So I spend most of my volunteer time with them now, working on that. But I've done many other things with them in the past. Like I said, I organized their writers' conference the one year. I used to do a retreat for writers that I organized a couple of years in a row. help them with their writing contest, help them, with a lot of things.
Well, you were involved with the leadership in a leadership capacity with Pen Writers. I know that. So
that's correct.
And it seems like everything you touch, you have this natural born leadership sort of like takes over everything,
but in a nice,
gentle way. That's what I mean in that way. Not like,
well, I'll
okay, get out of my way.
Compliment.
You know,
I think that's how you meant it.
So
yeah.
I was like, no, out of my way, out of my way. You know, no, I've known you for a year, like that. I know you're finesse in the way you do things, and you recommend things, and that's what it's all about. It's sort of giving people an opportunity to take a look at the same thing from a different perspective, and having them make a decision, because they have to make their own informed decision anyway. So, but this brings us to an exciting part. What I want to ask you, because I know. You're busy with everything, so you're looking at, and we talk about the balancing act of, motherly love and career, obviously. We know we have 24 hours a day. Okay, I mean, maybe you don't need that much sleep comparatively to someone like me. But suddenly, you know, let's take the average of 7 to 8 hours of sleep, maybe less than that, but 7 to 8 hours. So when you look at that and you minus those, that downtime, and you're left with around, I guess, around 16 hours or so of time that to do other things. So walk us through, you know, what you do. I mean, in terms of being able to balance all this thing together.
Well, I was recently asked that in a talk I did for Pen Writers,
mm-hmm.
and I had to think about it and figure out what it is that I do. And here's what I discovered:
mm-hmm.
that I go with the flow. And I may have 10 or 12 things on my desk at any one time, and I work on whatever is presently in the need or presently at hand or presently inspiring to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I may be working on those 10 or 12 things all at once at any given time,
mm-hmm.
and somehow they all just get done. Instead of trying to spend all my time organizing it into some kind of neat little, at this time I'll do this, and in that time I'll do that, I just go with inspiration and flow. And it surprised me to learn that I did that,
mm-hmm.
but apparently it's effective. I mean, I sometimes chide myself for not getting things done, yet people will tell you that I probably accomplish 10 times more than most people in a day because of that.
Mm-hmm.
For example, today I'm doing a radio show. I sent out a mass mailing to my list. I posted on Facebook and Twitter. I will do that again after the show.
Mm-hmm.
I have client work to do today. I have regular housework to do today. I have to, you know, run errands for my son whose car is in the shop today,
mm-hmm.
and make some kind of special dinner for my family who's usually home on Tuesday nights all together.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow that will all get done.
Mm-hmm.
If I look at the clock and say, oh my gosh, it's almost this time, I that will make me put on the brakes and think, oh, I'll never get it done. If I don't worry about the time and I just dive in and start doing things, things get done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you always been like this,
say,
productive since you were a child?
I never sit still. I never sit still. Even if I am riding in the car, we have a place about 2 hours from here in New York,
mm-hmm.
and we go there to hide out, and that two-hour ride, I'm usually thinking, well, what can I do in the car? Even if it's just thinking and planning, you know, what
right.
I'm going to do next, I'm always using my time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's great. You know, I just thought of something. In one of my interviews in the very beginning of my show in March or in April, actually, and my Cajun mom, I asked her for a recipe for living. And she said on the air, and she told me, she says, you know, when she was growing up, she had her mother telling her, you don't drink coffee standing up because I think it goes this way. You don't get rich by drinking your coffee standing up. And she couldn't figure out what mom was alluding to. And then later in life, she realized that what it means is that you have to take a little time out. If you sit down when you're drinking your coffee, you're able to enjoy the aroma. You're able to sort of take a little time out and live in the present moment.
And so, I agree with that, but I utilize that time. even my relaxation time is utilized in some way, even if it's just enjoyment.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a silly little saying. I'm not saying silly, you know, I mean, you know, as in silly, but it's just something very casual, and it was quite interesting. And so I'm thinking about you when you're saying you're always on the go, but I know that you could not have got things accomplished without being in the present moment.
You know, a good example of that is we've got a new neighbor who's got a little three-year-old, well, maybe she's four, and she comes over to our yard. And yesterday I was just sitting out in our in my swing and enjoying my flowers that we planted last year. And she comes over and just started a conversation with me. And I was able to thoroughly enjoy that conversation because I was in the present moment.
Right.
You know, I wasn't working, but I was still doing something what I felt was valuable.
Right, right. Well, what is coming up? Any more community projects in the horizon?
Oh, gosh. Mostly I'm going to be working on that, the teleseminars for readings and healings. I have a classmate who's going to work with me on that. We're planning to get that going probably in July, so people can watch for that. Of course, I'll still be doing stuff for pen writers, and I'm going to be doing that workshop in October for a college up near Albany, New York. I have a book, another book that I'm going to be coming out. Right now, I have a deficit of time and money for the book cover that I need because I want to have it done by a professional designer. But the book itself is done and waiting to be released to the world, and it's called Prayer Superchargers, How to Pray. The book for people who need answers in today's troubled times, which is based on a series of emails I wrote several years ago that people just were fascinated about how prayer is not just what you say, but how you say it. And I don't mean in the words. I mean sometimes it's the...
It's from the heart. Is it? Are you really in tune? And I agree with what you're talking about. Yeah.
But it's also the... angle from which you approach it, and one of my favorites is that, you know, don't pray the answer, pray the problem, because a lot of times we try to fix things for God instead of letting God fix it for us.
I got you. Right. No, it's true. It's very true. Very true. Well, how can our listeners get more information about you?
Well, probably the easiest way is via my sayloft.com website.
Okay.
Where I have links to all my major things. My book stuff is all on icantransform.com or makethepainstop.com. Or they can email me at info@sayloft.com. And I'm sure you'll have links to my site on your show site as well.
Right. Well, Jamie, we're coming real close to the end of the show right here. We got about maybe 90 seconds or so. What is the recipe for living you have for our listeners?
My recipe for living is how I sign all my books. Renew,
yes.
Revive, transform, which to me, this is what has transformed my life and helped me make it the most I can be every day.
That's fantastic. I really enjoyed that. That's very, very good. Thank you very much for the great recipe. And to all our listeners, thank you for tuning in this morning. Thank you, Jamie, for being with us this morning, spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. We will be taking next Tuesday morning off for the summer vacation, and we'll be back in 2 weeks on Tuesday, July 7th, with my special guest, Allegra Houston, Take Two. And she will kick off our topic for the month of July, which is Mompreneurs. And this is something that's quite interesting because Allegra has been with us before, kicking off Women Empowerment, the Balancing Act of Motherly Love and Career. And she will be back in July to kick off Mompreneurs. And Jamie, any last parting words that you want to share with us one last time before we sign off?
Transform your life.
Transforming life, okay.
You know, it is possible to have the life you want. That's what I would say, because I didn't think it was possible. I spent a period of time where I was miserable and mm-hmm. and ill, and you can transform your life. It is possible no matter who you are.
I agree with that. Thank you so much, Jamie, for being with us this morning. And for our listeners, for additional information, please check out johnnytan.com, my personal blog, frommymamaskitchen.com, frommymamaskitchentalkradio.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/fmmktalkradio.com. And to our call-in person, I believe your name is Charity. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. And for those other listeners that are on, thank you again for joining us this morning. Thank you again, and have a great couple of weeks, and happy 4th of July. Thank you. Bye-bye.